But I just gotta know one thing. Are you ready? No, I said, are you ready?
This is Brotherly Love Wrestling Podcast, your first stop for everything professional wrestling. So sit back and enjoy wrestling talk at its finest with your hosts, Larry Hall and Joe Corrado.
This is the Brotherly Love Wrestling Podcast. Today I'm going to hit Larry in the face with a plate glass window while it's on fire. This is for the Jigadoes and the Jigadettes. I hope you like it. Don't try this at home. Woop woop.
That is not what I was expecting. I'll tell you that right now. I'm told seconds before he hits record, I'm going to give you an intro for your intro. And that is what I get. God, I can't stand that dude.
I'm pretty sure the majority of people that know it and that just heard it popped. And that's what I'm here for, the cheap pop. I'm like fucking Mick Foley when he's introducing towns.
I'm not even going to say that dude's name. I can't stand him. I won't do it. So, welcome in, everyone, to Brotherly Love Wrestling Podcast. And like we have promised over the past couple weeks, that we're trying to bring all kinds of wrestlers and wrestling interviews to you. Today is no different.
It's no different.
Because today we have a 19-year veteran of the wrestling business, 4-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, 3-time IWGP Tag Team Champion. He's wrestled for TNA, for WWE, for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and has been in 5 G1 climaxes. Today we have Lance Hoyt on the show with us.
Yep, and recently you saw him in this past year's G1.
Yes.
You might have saw him on TV a couple weeks ago with a familiar face of a familiar guy that drinks some Steve Weiser's, stuns some people. I don't know. I think we're talking about Urkel.
No, I think this is one of those interviews I can't wait to talk to Lance and hear what he has to say. And, of course, Lance is now right now in Chicago at StarCast.
Chi-Town.
Yes. Where, I guess you could call it the center of the wrestling world right now, because there's a lot of people in Chicago.
The mecca of the wrestling world right now is in Chicago, Illinois. There is a lot of familiar faces. Some of the top faces and names in all of wrestling. There is someone there who was in a wrestling ring as of yesterday, probably doing some of his best trolling, possibly.
Yes. Yeah. CM Punk did put out a very good video leading up to StarCast and his appearance. It was great.
If he never gets into a ring again, it will make me hate that even more. Because he's so natural. He is so natural in there.
He is.
It's really unbelievable.
Is. Yeah. Yeah, you put a camera on him, he just goes.
When he's not completely miserable, mm-hmm. he's natural. It looked like he was having fun. He was in his element.
Yeah, anything can happen in the professional wrestling business, as we've seen before. So a lot of rumors are swirling because of this, of course. Because, like you said, there's so many people in Chicago, anything can happen.
You can't say that word 3 times or Beetlejuice shows up.
I don't think that's...
That's not how this goes?
No, that's not how it goes.
Okay, well, you can't say it anymore, or we're going to have to break into song and dance.
Okay. That might be a little bit closer.
Okay.
Okay, I like that one.
So without further ado, we bring you Lance Hoyt.
All right, we are here with Lance Hoyt, and he is on our show. Lance, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys, for having me on.
First of all, we want to welcome you back to the States.
I appreciate it.
Not a problem. And speaking of coming back from the States, you're just coming back from Japan, fresh off the G1. So I wanted to just start right there.
Cool.
Arguably had the best match of the whole G1 with Will Ospreay.
Thank you.
I mean, it's got to be up there. And I wanted to know, do you prefer to go up against the smaller, faster opponent, or would you prefer a big man versus big man a la your upcoming match with AC Baby? Now, what would you rather prefer? Or
I mean, for me, I think I had fun. You know, that was a great part about the G1 is it had, especially in our block, the A block, it had a mix of that in every sense. You know, the two monsters of the whole tag, or excuse me, the whole G1, you know, myself and Fale were in the same block. And like you said, I went from Ospreay to Fale. You know, went from, you know, arguably one of the best, you know, and he is the junior heavyweight champion right now, but you can't really classify him as a junior weight anymore because he competes in every level and every, you know, wrestler that exists in this business. And, you know, and to go from him to those super heavyweights that New Japan has, and that is Fale, you know, and I'd like to believe that Fale and I's match was a lot of fun and really good as well. You know, I know it was a very different style of match, and in 2019, you know, the guys that are a little bit smaller and that are more athletic and acrobatic and things like that seem to be kind of the going enjoyment for the wrestling fan around this day and age. But I think it's still always a cool, different aspect when you throw two super heavyweights in a ring, which you just, especially this day and age, don't see it that often. You know, so when Fale and I stepped in the ring together in the G1, again, that was something that it was never going to happen again in the G1 this year because there were no other guys of our size and stature in the G1. So to face a guy like AC, you know, at the Wrestling Revolver show coming up in October, it's one of those things. It's fun. It's a challenge because it's a different match every time. You know, whether you're working with a guy like Ospreay who's flying across the ring from, you know, one side to the next, and, you know, being able to throw him from one side to the other, and you're working with somebody like AC who's, you know, arguably I cannot pick him up and throw him across the ring, so I'm going to have to change my mind, my game, and do different things with him, kind of like I did with Fale. And so it's one of those things. It's, for me, it's just a lot of fun, and that was the fun part about the G1 this year, because, you know, working with Ospreay to Fale to Tanahashi to Okada to Kenta to Ibushi to Sonata to Evil, you know, all the different guys in the A block that existed, and them having to work with me, it was a lot of fun, you know, having the different dynamics all throughout the G1.
So, and this isn't your first G1. You've been in five in total, correct?
Yeah, five now.
So now, do you have, I mean, I'm sure it's a hard question to answer, but do you have a favorite tournament, or is it all different?
You know, this tournament this year for me was extremely special and a lot of fun for the simple fact that, you know, I was in four in a row, 2011, 12, 13, and 14. You know, then our group went to Pro Wrestling NOAH for 2 years, then I was injured for a year, and then, you know, last year's G1, they didn't include Smith or I because they considered us a team, whatever the case was. So this year, returning to it, you know, 8 years in New Japan, 19 years in this business, all the different things and factors behind me to come in and, you know, change an image, change my style, and change some minds about who the American Psycho Lance Archer is, was, and could be, was a lot of fun for me. And the matches, you know, having the caliber of matches that I was able to have with some of the absolute best in this business, you know, now and into the future, was just, it was a lot of fun. But I had a lot of fun in the G1s in the past. You know, my first G1, I didn't even understand the scale of the tournament, you know, because I literally just joined the company like a month and a half prior to being in the G1. You know, so not knowing who I was really competing with at that time was a different kind of scenario as it is compared to now. You know, I worked with Tanahashi in my very first G1. I knew who Tanahashi was. I knew he was the champion of the company. I knew, you know, the scale of what he was, but I didn't fully understand it. And knowing, you know, his history of basically, in a sense, rescuing New Japan from its dark days, and then becoming truly the ace of New Japan and all the different amazing matches he's had, you know, at all the different Wrestle Kingdoms and things like that. To go into Cork and Hall this year and have a match with them where arguably the crowd was split to a point where they were cheering me as much or more than Tanahashi at certain points in the match. And it's just a really cool experience in that. So this year's G1 was really, really cool. But, you know, the past G1s, getting to work with guys like AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, you know, and just a plethora of talents that had come through the G1 at different times. You know, getting to rekindle some of those rivalries, like I said, with Tanahashi and Okada, and, you know, having a new kind of rivalry with Will Ospreay, and, you know, guys like Fale and Evil, who I saw both as young boys or young lions when I first came into the company and to where they've gotten to now. And then Sonata, who was a young boy at All Japan back in 2009 when I went and did one tour there, and to see the level he's at now, you know, it's just, you know, it's a cool experience to have been in this business this long and now getting to work with those guys in all the different capacities. And then, like I said, ultimately working extremely hard to change the minds of the wrestling fans as to who I was, as to who I actually am.
Awesome. Now, you touched on the crowd a couple times and the crowd chants. I don't think a lot of people from the U.S. quite understand, like, what are the differences in performing for the Japanese crowd as opposed to over here in the States?
It just depends. You know, I think the Tokyo crowds have gotten very westernized, if you can say it that way. They're very much more into the show in a complete manner, like an American crowd or a U.S. crowd. You know, that they do buy into the heels and faces and stuff like that, and they'll actually boo and whatnot. But you do hit some of these more what we call country towns, Japan sometimes, especially if we're not doing TV and it's a smaller venue, and you get some more very traditional Japanese style crowds. And that really is an interesting experience, because if you've never been a part of it, like I said, the whole culture is changing a lot. But even when I started there, you know, in 2011 with New Japan, there were a lot of venues that we would go to, the smaller ones that were not TV and stuff like that. And, you know, you get to these buildings and they'd be full, you know, 1,000, 2,000 people, something like that. And then, you know, they would clap and they would cheer and then they'd be absolutely dead quiet. And it was kind of discerning at some point. You know, you're just kind of sitting there going, are they actually enjoying what's going on? You know, you're in the middle of this match and you're knocking the crap out of each other and hitting these big moves, and they'll, yay, and then they'll sit down. Yay, and they'll sit down. One of the biggest differences, you know, I've always noticed is that they really respect the guys, the fighters, the players, as they call them. You know, and so if guys get put in submission holds or any kind of hold, and you actually can make it to the rope and escape that hold, there's a respect level for that, and they'll cheer for that big time. Whereas in the States, I think, weirdly, it's sometimes seen as a weak thing to do. You know, if you can't just fight out of the hold, you have to get to the ropes and get the referee to get you out of it. You know, American fans sometimes, you know, depending on the match and the wrestlers and things like that, you know, kind of see it as a sign of weakness, where in Japan they see it as a sign of, you know, you really fought to get away and get out of it. You were smart and you got to the ropes and you got it broken by that manner. They'll cheer for that, and that's kind of a cool different experience. You know, I always say that American fan bases, U.S. fan bases are very, it's very much like wrestling in a beehive. There's always a constant buzz, whereas in Japan there's a high respect level, so it's almost like they're really, really paying attention to everything that's happening in the ring. And so they'll be quiet and stop and watch, you know, very intently, you know, as to what's happening. And then when something big and cool and amazing does happen, they cheer rightfully for it, but then they quiet back down and really start watching again. Whereas Americans are, so a lot of times I think they're hoping to get people to pay attention to them through whatever they're doing in the feeling of the fan. But if you can get the U.S. fan base to just lose their mind and go crazy, it's one of the coolest feelings in the world as well.
Yeah, that always interests me, like the different cultures just in general, not just in wrestling. So, I mean, to apply it to wrestling, that's best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Now, would you say that you have to change your kind of approach on trying to get over with that crowd? Is there like a completely different approach that you take? Are you always reinventing yourself?
Yeah, I think to degrees you're always doing that. It's, you know, whether if you're working in the States, I think you work a certain way and you work the crowd a certain way. If you were in Japan, you change your MO up. You know, I can still scare kids in Japan, whereas in the States, half of them will flip me off if I, you know, yell or scream at them. You know, two-year-olds in the United States don't take no crap. They'll tell you you're a piece of you know, just as fast as their parents call them. And in Japan, you know, I can still make the babies cry, which is a lot of fun. But then, you know, that's the same going wherever you're at, whether you go to the UK or you're down in Mexico or you're in the US. And then it depends on where in the US you are. If you're working in Texas, you know, where I live, and you work some of these traditional southern style towns, it's a very different style of wrestling. They don't really respond to all the crazy maneuvers and spots and stuff like that. They more respond to the personalities and the characters and, you know, the stories and stuff like that. So if you work in Southern Texas in these smaller towns, sometimes you have to abandon all the cool big spots you do and work more of a character-based match, more of a story-based match, because that's the way they get into it. Whereas if you go into the Northeast, into the New York area, or if you're even hitting like some of the places in California, like PWG or somewhere like that, you know, these fans are wanting these amazing five-star style matches. So you change your MO and how you work and how you wrestle and things like that. But I also always try to keep a little bit of myself in every style that I go and perform in, whether it's in the States, in Japan, Mexico, UK, East Coast, West Coast, Texas, wherever I'm at. I'm always trying to give them the American Psycho, Lance Hoyt, Lance Archer, depending on where I'm at and what number they're using. But I'm trying to adapt to the area and the style that they want to see. Like I said, you know, am I being more of a wrestler tonight, or am I being more of the character tonight? You know, and that's kind of the MO going into it and deciding what I'm doing and where I'm doing it. But there's always a little bit of adaptation, and the ones who are the best in this business, I think, are the ones that adapt the best and the most smoothly, depending on where they're at, who they're working for, and at what point they're working for.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. That switch that you can pull and having to reinvent yourself and go to different. I love that wrestlers are able to do that, and the really, really good ones, you guys are just, you do it seamlessly. And whether you're, like you said, in Texas or you're in Japan, it's pretty cool to see that evolution of a character. Now, you were tag team partners with Davey Boy Smith Jr., as you alluded to, Killer Elite Squad. How has it been transitioning back to singles after being in tag team?
You know, I just, there's not much of a transition per se. It's just a point of focusing. You know, when you're in a tag team, it's a team. And if it's a good team like KES was, you know, everything kind of worked around the team together. You know, it's like, what do we do together to get the team over? And that's what we did together to make sure that KES was, you know, one of the more dominant or most dominant teams in Japan history. You know, 3-time IWGP, 2-time NOAH GHC, 2-time NWA World Tag Team Champions. So we had the accolades behind us because we were an extremely strong and good team. You know, we were together for almost 7 years, and it's one of those things, you know, as time goes, times change and things change and whatnot. So it wasn't really a transition back into a singles wrestler because I work a lot of singles action when I'm not in Japan. You know, Smith was either living out in Florida or up in Canada with his family, and I'm down here in Texas. So pretty much any time I wasn't in Japan, you know, or we weren't in Japan, we were working singles, you know, depending on where we were, because he had his groups and companies that he went and worked for on a regular basis, and I did the same. Most of the time that was in a singles capacity. So, you know, it wasn't really a transition back into a singles wrestler because I was still doing it the entire time that we were a team. But, you know, it was in Japan. It's more changing the mindset of the people who've been watching us in Japan, you know, because they knew me and him together as KES, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's choosing to leave the company, and they're putting me in the G1, the biggest singles tournament in the world, in my opinion. So it's a point of, like I said, I think people had an expectation of who I was based on the team and the things that they knew and saw. And so when I was able, I guess, in a sense, to change the image and change the style and change the personality to some degree, that was more of the transition rather than me transitioning back into singles wrestlers, more transitioning the fan base's mindset as to who I was.
Okay, going off of that, I want to kind of throw a hypothetical, if you'll allow it.
Go for it.
Now, if you were to reform Killer Elite Squad,
right,
what company, what division would you choose to dominate?
What division? What do you mean, what division?
Not division. which company? Like, what company would you say would be the best fit for Killer Elite Squad? Like, what's the best tag team company?
Right. I don't know. It's one of those things, like, obviously we have a history in Japan. So there would always be, I think, an acceptance of KES back together in Japan. But at the same time, you know, even with the acceptance, if we did it anytime soon, it's almost one of those it's too soon type scenarios where, you know, we were just a team. So how does that change going forward without a little bit of separation? It's kind of like a relationship. But as far as other companies are concerned, you know, I mean, I think it would be cool in any sense, whether it was new and blossoming AEW, which hasn't really fully established their tag team division yet, you know, and that would be kind of cool to go in there and dominate that. But or WWE, a company that I think nobody would expect to see us at, and we probably wouldn't be called the Killer Elite Squad if we showed up there.
No.
You know, and it's one of those things where it's just, you know, different place would have different reactions, different mindsets and whatnot. And I think we would be successful in any of them, depending on how they chose to push the team. But I think right now, unfortunately, it's one of those things, like, even if we showed up in AEW Saturday night as KES, it would be a reaction, it would be a pop, it would be like, holy crap, they're here. But it hasn't been that long. So it's not like one of those scenarios where it's like, you know, it's been 2-3 years and nobody's seen us together and so on and so forth, and then all of a sudden we show up in AEW, you know, and or if we showed up, like I said, in WWE, which unfortunately I think the name would not be the same because of the rating system that they're trying to adhere to. But still, I think it's the same thing. It's like, it's such a new separation that if we came back together now, it would be good, but it wouldn't be as good as if it had some time apart type scenario.
That makes complete sense.
Right. And then, like I said, we would absolutely dominate wherever we went. It's just a point of how cool would it be if it's in another year from now or 2 years from now, and all of a sudden nobody's thinking about it, nobody's expecting it, everybody's going, yeah, I remember KES back in the day, and then all of a sudden KES shows up, they'd be like, holy crap, they're here. Whereas if we did it now, it'd be like, oh, cool, they're here. But then that'd be about it.
Yeah, it'd have to be the perfect scenario now. You could kind of play right with the idea down the road a little bit more. You can kind of throw it in there as a bigger surprise.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only way that it would make a huge reaction is if we were a secret team that showed up in some kind of tournament and won it right off the bat with an extremely dominating style. I think that would be the only way right now if KES showed up somewhere else. If, like I said, there was, you know, an open challenge on Raw or SmackDown, an open challenge at AEW, and we just showed up, dominated, took the titles, and walked out type scenario. I think that would draw some kind of reaction in a really amazing, cool, positive way, but if it wasn't done that way, like I said, right now, because it's such a new separation and a new time, it's one of those things that people would be like, oh, that's cool, but and that'd be about the end of the reaction.
I don't know. I just popped and you said it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it would have to be done that way, but
yeah.
Is there a company that's wanting to do that? And right now, you know, like I said, Smith is working with MLW.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been predominantly working with New Japan, so he can't really, I don't think, contractually couldn't show up in any of those other companies because he's with MLW. And right now, like I said, I think he's finding himself in MLW, and I think he wants to do some MMA stuff at some point here in the near future. You know, myself, with what came off the G1, I'm hoping that, you know, just continues to move forward in New Japan and the wrestling world altogether. So, like I said, I hope nothing but success for him, but as I think of right now, I think we're kind of cool in the Jets and the whole KES thing.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of that, you're saying about kind of moving forward, what are some upcoming events that you might be looking forward to?
Oh man, depending on when this airs, you know, I have one in Chicago with Warrior Wrestling on Sunday, which is going to be a lot of fun, working with Alex Zane, who's amazing independent talent that's coming up in the business. So many different shows, luckily, you know, coming into September from the week after that, working with one of the best juniors in the business, Barrett Brown, out of Texas with VIP Wrestling, and then I'll be down with Lions Pride Sports, and then traveling all over the state of Texas, going to Colorado in the middle of the month, and then, you know, New Japan has an East Coast tour at the end of September, and just stuff keeps moving on. Pro Wrestling Revolver at the V&M October, and Cactus League out in California and stuff like that. So there's a lot of cool upcoming stuff that's happening in the next month and a half.
And with New Japan, you said coming to the East Coast, will you be on the show that is in Philadelphia?
It's possible.
Okay.
Always leave them wanting more.
Yes, exactly.
All right, I wanted to throw another type of fun dream scenario. Since you're singles competitive right now, what are your dream matches, or who haven't you worked before? Who haven't you faced before that you want to get in the ring with?
Man, for me, it's more of a, as far as dream scenarios or championship scenarios. I've never been a guy, you know, a lot of the guys, and it's cool, I'm glad they do it, but I've never been a guy that's put a list of guys down and said, I have to work this guy, I have to work that guy type scenario. I'm more of a scenario type person. It's like, who is in a title position that if I am in that place, that will draw the attention, and if, you know, if I become champion of that scenario, then that draws even more attention, you know, to the pressure being in that scenario. As far as, you know, like with New Japan, you know, obviously we've got Jon Moxley as the U.S. champion, Naito is the Intercontinental champion, Okada, who I would love to face in an IWGP heavyweight title scenario. You know, those are the guys that I'm looking at, like I said, and it's because they are the champions, and I want to be a champion. I want to be seen in that caliber, in that state. You know, I think that's my focus, and those are my dream scenarios, is to go in and beat up Ibushi and take his contract and show up at Wrestle Kingdom and face Okada for the heavyweight title, you know, at January 4th and 5th, one of the two. You know, that would be my ultimate dream scenario, and it's because he's the champion. Now, if Okada loses the title to Suzuki at the UK show that's coming up on the 31st, then my dream scenario is to face Suzuki for the heavyweight title, you know, Suzuki-Gun versus Suzuki-Gun. You know, what a crazy scenario that would be. So those are the things that I look at when, you know, you ask me what are my dream scenarios. It's like, well, I want to be in a title picture. I want to be, you know, in that echelon of wrestlers. And it's not that I'm looking at any one specific wrestler and any specific company and going, I want to face them, because there are so many amazing talents. And I think to break that down and go, I want to face this guy, I want to face this guy, we would be on the phone for the next 3 hours naming every single wrestler that exists out there, because there are so many good wrestlers right now, whether it's in New Japan, AEW, WWE, regardless of what people want to say about their product, whether they like it or not, has an amazing, amazing depth pool of talent, from their main roster to NXT to the guys that are still training and coming up in their performance center and stuff like that. It's amazing how many simply insanely amazing talents they have that would be a lot of fun to step in the ring with, you know. And the Impact, you know, Impact, a company that, you know, I wrestled for when it was TNA back in the day, but, you know, you got your Brian Cages and guys like that. You know, I've worked with Cage on an independent level, but to be able to step in the ring with Cage in a championship level, that would be a dream scenario. Like I said, it's not because it's just Cage, it's because of who Cage is, it's the championship that he holds, and the stature that would carry, actually having a chance to fight him for that title, you know, one of the main events of one of the shows. So when you ask me dream scenarios, those are my dream scenarios. Championship matches, title matches, you know, whatever the case may be in whatever company that is.
But it's safe to say whoever steps in the ring, everybody dies.
Everybody dies. I'm sorry. That's just what's going to happen.
Now, where did that come
from? I might die too, but I'll be the last one.
Where did that come from, that moniker, that saying?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, for me, it was just kind of a feeling. It was kind of a, you know, I'm the American Psycho Lance Archer. When I step in that ring, that's my MO. That's my process. You know, I'm going in there to hurt him, to kill him, to make sure that everybody that I step in the ring with dies. So, you know, that's the whole MO, is that everybody dies. You step in the ring with the American Psycho Lance Archer, everybody dies.
It's quick and to the point, and it's very, very effective.
Yeah, even though I haven't actually killed anybody yet, I guess that's a good thing.
You step in the ring with Suzuki, I think one of you will. So, recently...
I've learned from the best, if you want to say it that
way. I wanted to touch on this because I'd be remiss if I didn't. Now, a couple weeks ago, you were on a USA Network on Straight Up Steve Austin in possibly my dream scenario, with Sal from Impractical Jokers and Stone Cold. Now, how did that come about?
Just, you know, it was one of those things. They were casting for the part of wrestling trainer, I guess, and had a mutual friend that, you know, was willing to get me in contact with the casting department for Straight Up Steve Austin, and went through a whole process. You know, they did a full screening, background screening, all that fun stuff. And then it just kind of worked out. And the coolest part of that whole scenario was I'd never met Steve before. I'd seen him a couple times backstage when I was with WWE, but, you know, never had any kind of interaction with him. And I've never heard anything negative about the man, but he's obviously Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? You know, so I knew I was going to be a part of his show, and it was a really cool scenario. Just going into the whole thing, and I'd been dealing with, again, the casting department for that show. And I was sitting at home one day, and my phone rang, and it was Beverly Hills on the phone. And I usually don't answer the phone if I don't know who's calling me. I just let it go to voicemail. I knew I'd been having communication with people out in L.A., so I'm thinking, oh, Beverly Hills, maybe it's another person from, you know, the casting department or whatever. And so I answered the phone, and I actually answered it on my speakerphone, which made it even more fun. And I was like, Lance? I was like, hello? It's Steve Austin. I was like, hey, man, what's up? You know, it was very, it was a cool experience, just because, like I said, I wasn't expecting a phone call from him, you know. He was just extremely down to earth, and I don't want to give do unfair justice to doing my Stone Cold Steve Austin. He didn't say that much.
I don't know. I think you're pretty spot on. I mean, that was awesome.
Oh hell yeah! Anyway, he just, I kept saying things, and he goes, "What? What?" And I'm like, "Can you hear me? What?" I don't know. Bad Verizon commercial. No, he was nothing but cool, man. He should be on Verizon. What?
Oh, my what? God. If there's any way to make this happen, I hope it does.
Hey, Steve, if you make money off of that suggestion, please. Put a kickback. No, but nothing but cool, man. Just shot the shit for a little while. You know, just talked for a bit. I guess he was driving home. I think he was just trying to get a feel for me, and he was asking questions. You know, he's like, man, I hadn't watched wrestling so long. I don't even know what's going on. What are you doing over there in Japan? I was like, oh, you know, this and that, and da-da-da. And we had a really good conversation, and like I said, just really cool, down to earth. Like I said, I think he was just trying to get a feel for me. You know, maybe if just the conversation went completely south, he'd call somebody and go, help, not that guy. But, you know, that didn't happen, and, you know, I got out to L.A., and, we went through a rehearsal the day before. You know, Sal's reactions were actually legit. You know, he didn't know what he was walking into with all the different scenarios. So he didn't know that I was going to be there. Not that he knew who I was or anything at the time, but he didn't know that he was walking into a wrestling ring scenario with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He just knew he was there with Steve and whatnot. And but we went through a whole walkthrough the day before, and it was a lot of fun, just because, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Again, you know, we had the conversation, that was cool, and then showed up, and he was really cool, and we had talked a little bit on the way over to the place, and then we get in the ring, and, you know, he's running the ropes with me, and we're doing, you know, crossovers and drop downs. He starts taking some bumps, hitting the turnbuckles and stuff like that, and I was like, man, I didn't think he'd do anything. He was he was having fun, you know, like you saw on the show when he started taking bumps and stuff.
Yeah,
he was doing that with me the day before, and like I said, I had no idea that he would do that. You know, and he was totally into it, and we had a lot of fun. Like I said, the whole Sal scenario, you know, I didn't expect more to be aired, but Steve was very gracious. You know, he gave me a lot of speaking time with what we filmed. Like I said, in comparison to what was aired, and again, when it was aired, I didn't really expect it to be as much as he was giving me, because it's his show, and Sal's the guest, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But he was extremely gracious in that aspect. Like, he was, like, the me teaching Sal the lockup, there were so many scenarios that he'd be like, all right, Lance, explain it, you know, and he'd let me go into an explanation and talk to Sal and work with Sal and stuff like that. So, you know, he was, like I said, from top to bottom, start to finish, from the phone call he made to, you know, when we got finished filming, nothing but cool.
That's incredible. And you got to sell a Stone Cold Stunner on TV.
Yes, I did. That was actually, I'll put the secret out there. That was my suggestion, dang it. I was like, because initially they were just like, hey, just shake hands, you know, Sal, Steve will tell you, thanks for coming and see you later type scenario. And I tell him to Steve, and I was like, so, you want to stun me? And he's like, you ever taken one for? Like, well, not from you. And so it was really, really, for me, like I said, wrestling, you know, just the fact that it was Stone Cold Steve Austin giving me a Stone Cold Stunner, you know, it was really cool. And we didn't tell the camera crew or the production or the producers or the director or anybody that was going to happen. Obviously, Sal didn't know it was going to happen. So I think it was one of those things that got a very genuine pop and react. Like, everybody behind the cameras were biting their lips, not screaming, yell, because they didn't know that it was coming. You know, it was really cool. You know, that was just between Steve and I, and we just saved it as a surprise for everyone.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was fun to watch, too. And you guys did it perfectly. And that's a funny thing.
What they didn't film, though, that was me getting him back. You know, after they went out of camera, I went to the bathroom, I talked him back in the ring, big booty choke slam, you know, everybody died, you know. They didn't show that part.
Of course not.
They filmed all that other stuff first, came there last, him and Sal left him laying in the ring and walked out and flew back to Texas, but they didn't show that part.
probably not the image that Stone Cold would have wanted. Dying.
Like, what the hell, man? I'm the star. Come on. No, I'm just
kidding. Lance, we want to thank you so much for taking the time. We know with StarCast and all, it's probably a really busy weekend for you. So thank you so much for just taking the time out and talking with us and being on the show.
No problem, man. I got a 6:30 in the morning flight out to Chicago, so.
Oh, okay.
Good luck and have fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good one. And there you have it. Lance Hoyt on the line doing probably one of the top five best Steve Austin impressions that I've ever heard.
Yeah, I agree.
Who was the guy from Mad TV?
Will Sasso.
Will Sasso.
Yes.
He's right behind Will Sasso.
Yeah. And AJ Styles is a pretty good one, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they, all three of the Good Brothers, they do a really good job with it. But Lance, man, I got to give it to him. I think he's up there.
He's up there.
That one's pretty damn good.
As a surprise, that had the pop level on that one was higher.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
And everything, I mean, just perfect interview. Hopefully things that you didn't know about him, now you know.
Yes.
And you'll look forward to his upcoming events. Like he said, he's got one in Iowa versus AC Baby, Chicago on Sunday versus one of our former guests in Alex Zane. Yes. Everybody Dies versus the Taco Man.
I think that's going to be an amazing match. Just knowing Zane's matches and seeing how he worked in Japan to put them two together, that's going to be an insane match.
And I know he said that, I mean, it's got a different appreciation for both, but I always love the David versus Goliath, the big man versus the small man. I feel like the story's already built in. Even if there's not even a story to be told leading up to it, I feel like it's easier to get that story across with big versus little as soon as it starts. I mean, I get it, the whole monster versus monster mentality. That also has its own story in itself, but I mean...
Yeah, but you know what? And maybe from his point of view as a talent... Because it takes more to build that big guy versus big guy story, instead of the story not being there like David versus Goliath, like you said, maybe it is more challenging. It's, you know, I mean, better for them and more fun for them in the creative process to try and put a match together.
I will give Lance that nowadays you don't really see the big man versus big man, and you don't really get that well-told story. I mean, if you think about it, what do you have, Braun versus Brock? I mean... AEW doesn't really have a big man, so we're not probably going to get a big man versus big man match over there.
Yeah,
I mean, like you said, him versus Fale.
Yes.
And over in Japan, there's not really too many big guys either. I mean, they're really, the land of the giants is diminishing. So it is a rarity that you get to see Goliath versus Goliath. I almost butchered that, but you didn't know.
Yeah, but I mean, like we said, that was a very fun interview, and the not only that, finding out a lot about Lance, because, I mean, then again, even though there are a lot of people that do know him because they watch New Japan and all, there's a lot of people that don't. And that's another reason why we like having all these different wrestlers on, is to introduce people to new wrestlers, new wrestling, and be able to watch all kinds of different wrestling instead of just stuck on one company or one style.
Yes. And on that note, before we wrap up, we would like to remind you about September 28th, at the Wrestle Factory, 3 p.m., pizza party wrestling, grapple picking. Now, if you haven't got tickets yet, shame on you, you've been banned. Just kidding. If you haven't gotten tickets yet, go online, use the promo code THINCRUST, all capital letters, 20% off, ticket price comes to about $16, or doll hairs, that's a lot of doll hairs. Save some money on us. You're welcome.
Speaking of saving money, Pro Wrestling Tees right now is running their sale for Labor Day from right now until next Tuesday, and it's 20% off. Use the promo code Labor Day. Make sure you visit our store, Brotherly Love Wrestling, and get one of our t-shirts.
You know what? Get a t-shirt from Lance, and you get a t-shirt from us.
There you go.
It's the best of both worlds.
No, don't go there. That was last
episode. That was last week.
Last week, can't go there. One final thing, Brotherly Love Wrestling now has an Instagram page. I forgot it the last two shows to promote it, but
he really drops the ball.
I really did.
But whenever he gets the chance, he drops the ball.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's what I do. But Go on Instagram, follow Brotherly Love Wrestling.
And we won't post a damn thing.
That's not true. I do all the posting. Whether it's pictures of us with any kind of superstars or like a little clip from tonight's show, or even events we go to. So you see a bunch of different things on our Instagram. And so follow us, Brotherly Love Wrestling, on Instagram. You okay over there?
Yep.
Okay. And
one last thing. Okay. Make sure you go to our Exchange-A-Gram, where we take the pictures from the line and we put them out on the line. Exchange-A-Gram. Pictures from, instantaneously, we've taken this picture and we want to put it out on the line. We put it on our Exchange-A-Gram.
That's where the shit-eating grin came from. Okay. But anyway, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the interview and hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll be talking to you very soon.
Very, very soon. Later!